Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host today, Cynthia McClure, with Ursula Rutenberg. Hello, Ursula.
Hello, Cynthia.
Today, we will be presenting issues that surround the lesbian, gay, and bisexual, and transgender communities.
We will have excerpts from an interview with Alan Krug. Alan Krug is the author of Getting to Ellen, a memoir about love, honesty, and gender change. Ellen transitioned from male to female in 2009. She will be speaking Wednesday, the 20th of November, from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Octagon Center for the Arts in the Community Gallery about her book, and she'll do a reading and a meet and greet. She will also be speaking Wednesday, the 20th of November, in the Sunroom in the Memorial Union on the ISU campus in Ames.
But first, let's introduce Bradley Freihofer, who is joining us this morning. Good morning, Brad.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
Brad is with the LGBT Student Services at ISU, and can you describe this organization?
Sure. So again, I'm the director of the one of the longest acronyms, I think, on campus, the LGBT Student Services Center. That stands for Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender Student Services Center. And we really serve to support all of our students across campus when it comes to sexuality and gender. So we do a variety of different things. We do programming. We do outreach. We do education. We serve and work individually with students. We work with student organizations. And we work with the entire campus climate as well.
How long has the organization existed?
Well, our doors opened in 1992, so we're actually one of the oldest in the country. I think we're about the 14th oldest LGBT student services center in the country, which I think is tremendous and something very unique for Central Iowa.
Yeah, we should be proud of it. It's very progressive. Brad, what is Transgender Day?
So National Transgender Day of Remembrance is a day in which we memorialize and really mourn those who we've lost to transphobia and transgender-related violence across the country and across the world, so both in the United States and otherwise. So it's a day in which we take some time to memorialize and recognize those who we've lost and to honor and recognize hate crimes and violence committed against transgender people.
Brad, for those of us or those who are listening who may not be familiar with transgenders, can you please explain the term?
Sure. First of all, I want to say I think the term transgender can be has different meanings depending on the context in which we're talking about. And so to briefly describe it and how I'll probably talk about the term today, it's generally referred to folks whose gender identity doesn't match their biological sex or their sex or gender prescribed at birth.
Do you think a lot of prejudice against the LGBT community member, community is based on fear?
I think in some parts it's based on fear. I think it's based on some myths about what it means to be LGB or T. I think a lot of it has to do with education. I know when I grew up in central Wisconsin, not very many people talked about sexuality or gender, and it wasn't until I got to college where I was really able to learn and explore more about what these identities mean and how they impact both me and the folks around us. And I really think they affect all of us, no matter who you are. Everyone has a sexuality and everyone has a gender, which means the issues that we'll talk about today, I think, affect our entire community.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Sure. I think we usually use two terms to talk about the identities we're talking about today, and one is cisgender and the other is transgender. Cisgender it refers to individuals whose gender identity matches their biological sex or their gender assigned at birth or their sex assigned at birth. And so I think for cisgender folks and for transgender people, these issues really do matter. And we as a community, I think, especially the Iowa community, I think we really want to take care of each other and support each other. And so one of the ways that I think we need to do that is probably by expanding our knowledge a little bit about this whole long acronym of LGBT and allies and what that means.
Can you explain the cisgender term again? It went by a little bit fast for me to understand it as well.
Sure.
What exactly did you mean by that?
Sure. So when we talk about the term cisgender, what we're referring to is folks who, so when someone's born, we usually have the expectation that they're going to be labeled either an M or an F, male or female. And then we automatically assume that those male or female bodied people will be boys and girls, and that they're going to grow up to be men and women. And that assumption, and for folks who do grow up and fit those identities, so they're female and may become girls or women, I think, or for males, men, and boys, those folks may identify as cisgender, where their biological sex matches their gender identity.
So cyst?
Cis.
Cis.
Yep, C-I-S.
That's an acronym for something. What does that mean?
It really means where things are matched, so where they're similar. So male, what we assume is that if you're a man, you will be male, and if you're a woman, you'll be female. That's not always the case for folks, and so that's where the identity of cisgender comes in. Think of it maybe as simplified, the opposite of transgender.
So that could be either a heterosexual or a gay person?
Yes, because sexuality is different than gender. We make them confused a lot, but they actually are different.
Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Sure. So you can identify as transgender and as straight, as gay, as bisexual, as pansexual. You can identify as cisgender and be straight, gay, bisexual. Or pansexual. I think both of these identities are separate. So In for example, myself, I can have a sexual orientation and I have a gender identity. And those two things are different, and I may be at different places along those spectrums.
So I think one of the things that is often confusing is, what is the relationship between being transgender and being gay? Is there a direct connection, or are they two separate issues?
They're really two separate issues. And so developmentally, we talk about them along different paths, and they have different experiences. But the reason that we lump this whole LGBT thing together is because there is some shared oppression amongst this group. There are some shared pieces that bring this group together that folks who might identify as straight or cisgender may not experience or may not even be aware of, which is, again, I think why we go back to National Transgender Day of Remembrance as a way to kind of make visible and talk some more about those experiences.
So it's the shared oppression that is what connects people?
That is correct, yeah.
In this particular area?
Yeah.
And the oppression is around?
Oh, we see it a lot. It's around sexuality and gender. So that's the focus. And so it's going to look in many different ways depending on each person and each person's experience. But there are shared themes that we pull out of those experiences.
Talk about our local community. Is this a common situation? Are there a lot of transgender people in any given community? Or describe a little bit about, I think this is something people think of as maybe happening in New York City or Chicago, or Lou Reed sings about it. Or
it's happening somewhere else and not and doesn't have a face, a local face to it.
Well, let me try to bring that home a little bit, because I think especially a lot of Central Iowans would be surprised to know that there's a lot of transgender people in Ames at Iowa State who've grown up in communities both rural and urban here in the state of Iowa. And so this is individuals who identify as transgender are within our community today. And they're facing both some great successes and some amazing challenges. And so I think it's important for folks in Central Iowa to know that. And although it may feel distant, we might not know readily when we meet somebody whether they do identify as LGBT. And so I think it's helpful to keep that in mind, that assumption we have that everybody might be straight or everybody might be cisgender. Is something we might want to hold in check a little bit, or maybe question our assumption about.
The transgender frame of or situation, is this something that is seen as a decision that somebody makes, or is it seen as an inherent condition that somebody has from birth on?
No, that's a good question. I think I certainly don't want to speak for all transgender people, and I don't think I can or really encapsulate all of those experiences. What I can share is a lot of the students that I work with, they may have always known this feeling inside, but have had not the language to describe it until maybe they've gotten to college or they've visited somewhere where they started to hear this terminology. I think our younger generations are really getting a better understanding of this because they're talking about it, and they've got friends who are coming out and talking more about it.
Can you describe this feeling? You said they have this feeling.
Yeah, you know, it's when we talk about gender identity, it's really how we see ourselves. Like, you know, it's kind of between the ears. It's in your mind. It's how you see yourself. So when we talk about feeling like men or women or feeling masculine or feminine, These are feelings internal. I think many folks don't question that necessarily when they get up, but there are some students that I certainly work with who do, and it's a major conflict for them to wake up and be themselves in maybe a body or in a realm that doesn't match, or they're not able to fully express who they are, or there's limitations or expectations. In gender, there are many expectations that we have. We have roles that we assume people are going to do based on their sex assigned at birth. And I think that's something we might want to explore a little bit.
So you're talking that somebody wakes up and they feel the identity of the opposite gender that they're born with. And so they take on the persona of whatever they're assigned to just to make their life easier. But it's living a lie.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's necessarily easier, but it's the...
Well, I mean, the expectations. I mean, it's the social expectations. They're not going to get harmed. They're not going to be fired. They're going to have a safe place to live. All these expectations are imposed on them so that they can't live an authentic life. That's what I've understood and read. And it's but it's living a lie internally.
Well, and I do think it's across... a spectrum. You know, we talk a lot about spectrums, continuums, and multiple different ways to talk about the whole realm of gender identity and expression. And so I really do think that for some students, it is they're navigating somewhere along that spectrum. But the expectation is that we're on the opposite ends of that spectrum, and that those boxes at the very end are where we should be. We should either be in one or the other. We can't be somewhere in between. And I think that's something that we have to continue to do education about and talk more about, is we've got students who represent that whole continuum, and making sure that we're providing equitable access for them to succeed, get an education, and go on and change the world in their variety of different ways.
When you're doing the education, what is the questions? What are the questions that you find people having the most about transgender issues?
I think for a lot of folks, it's just trying to understand that experience and that feeling, because many folks don't necessarily have that. They may identify as cisgender and may say, I don't have that experience in the every day, where folks are questioning my gender identity, or they're giving me grief because of my gender expression. Or I'm, you know, trying to navigate medical establishments or healthcare, or I'm trying to navigate, you know, I've got two different documents. They're both legal documents, but one's got two different gender or sex markers. And so how do I navigate? Which one do I use and when? And I think for some of our students, these are very high stresses. And the list is quite lengthy on that.
And so depending upon the environment and the people that you're dealing with, it could be dangerous even.
Absolutely. I think for some of our students, safety is a huge question, whether it's using a restroom, whether it's navigating or going to the airport and getting on a flight, whether it's getting a job. I think all of these things are concerns related to safety, where students are very nervous. Some of the students I work with are scared about that.
So you gave three examples, using a restroom, getting on an airplane, and having a job. Can you go through those three examples and explain where the danger is there?
Yeah. So, you know, I work with a student this last semester who has this debate about restrooms. What restroom do I use? For this student, they are navigating transitioning their gender. And so there's not this switch right away when they wake up where it's all of a sudden, okay, now I can and feel comfortable to use this other restroom, or they have to make the decision. Do they walk into the men's restroom necessarily and maybe navigate issues related to violence and safety? Or do they head into the women's room, even though they may present very masculinely, and now navigate people yelling at them that they're in the wrong restroom? And so, you know, realizing that people generally are going to feel maybe a little uncomfortable in those settings, and that, again, the major goal for students is they just want to use the restroom and go on with their business and go on to class. And so that's really what their focus is to just be able to find a space. And some of our students are going to hold going to the restroom if they feel like it's not going to be safe. And that's not healthy or good either. And so trying to create spaces where students can feel safe, or we can do some education so that students can support each other in those spaces.
And what happens when you're getting on a plane?
Well, obviously you might go through TSA and and you know, be physically touched. And I think for a lot of trans folks, that is a very uncomfortable experience. And then documentation, we talked about. It depends if you've got your passport and your driver's license, because both of those could be different related to your gender marker or sex marker, which could create a conflict at TSA when they're looking for consistency. Even though that legally, that student actually might have the correct documentation, that both of those might be correct based on the legal system that they're working within.
So these have actually happened to people. They get them pulled aside because of, you know, they get flagged because the TSA agent may not be particularly aware, but they see the inconsistency.
Well, it can even be at a local level too, with law enforcement, or if getting pulled over, any of those type of things. So I really want to tip my hat to some of the organizations in Central Iowa who've stepped out and continue to understand trans identities in that perspective more. Certainly a tip of the hat to the Iowa State Police Department for engaging in some of those conversations as well.
So how did Transgender Day get started?
Well, when we look at the beginning, it really starts with an unfortunate incidence of violence where there's this realization, I think, across the community that we really need to that we've lost so many people and that these stories aren't necessarily captured. The news media may not capture them accurately, may not capture them at all.
And was there a particular incident that this is related to?
There was. And when we look at who that is, it was Rita Hester, whose murder on November 28th, 1998, really kicked off this idea of remembering our loss, remembering our dead.
And what happened to Rita?
You know, I don't know if I have the details about her incident.
I read about it online. I Googled it. She was a very athletic transgender individual. She was African American, male to female transgender. Very, you know, what's like 6'2", over 200 pounds, like 230 pounds. You know, very confident and individual. And she never assumed that she would be, you know, anything like this could happen because of your physical stature. Anyway, from what I've read is that she was tied up and stabbed and killed in her apartment. And it took about a week for them to find her, 5 days. Mm-hmm. So the people that knew and loved her just thought, and this was the fourth transgender murder in the Boston area. Mm-hmm. And I think it was in 2009, I believe, that it happened. And these happen all over the country. No, actually, it's been a decade. Actually, it's 1998, I think it was, that happened. And from what I've also read is that minority, male to female, transgender individuals are targeted a lot more. And their status is in question because of holding a job and being allowed to go into a homeless shelter. They're marginalized a great deal more.
Yeah, creating safe and welcoming spaces for all trans people, I think, is really, really important. And National Transgender Day of Remembrance, and I encourage folks online, there's a variety of different memorials to folks, and there's really, really difficult things to read on there. Very violent crimes that end in death or murder, and it's just I think it's really, really challenging to read through these. But I think it's important to know that this is happening. It's happening across the United States and across the world, and it's something we need to continue to make visible and for folks to know about, because it does affect folks here in Iowa that these things are happening, and that's part of that's the conversation around finding safe spaces and safe people to talk to and to chat with.
So if somebody isn't with the IOSU community, can they get in touch with you? Or
Absolutely.
Is there other organizations locally?
And I definitely encourage folks to get in touch with our office. We do connect folks to a variety of community-based resources, whether they're in Des Moines or here in Ames. We've got a great Ames PFLAG chapter who is just an outstanding group of folks.
Can you describe PFLAG?
You bet. It stands for Parents, Friends, and Family of Lesbians and Gays, and I would argue bisexual and transgender people as well. And it's a group of just that, parents, family, and friends, and LGBT people who come together to support each other in the community. So you know, for maybe there's a parent with an LGBTQA child. PFLAG is a great organization to connect with and to find a community of other folks who have gone through similar experiences and connect with them and find resources and support.
So this is a safety. You know, PFLAG is a safety haven.
You bet. It does safety. It does education. It builds a community. And it really talks about pride and being proud. And I think that's really critical. We're so thankful here in Ames to have such a great and active PFLAG chapter.
So, Brad, if somebody listening to this would like to contact either you or PFLAG, what's the best way to find that information?
A lot is online these days, but absolutely, people can send me an email, or they can give me a call, or they can drop by the office as well. Our email address is LGBTSScenter. That's LGBTSScenter@iastate.edu, and our phone number is 515-294-5433.
Thank you.
Is the PFLAG, do you have their information, because they're local too?
Yeah, I believe they meet every second Tuesday of the month.
Out on the fringe today, sweating on the hinge tonight. From the prairie, the night begins its climb, rolling dark like the ocean against the fire in the sky. All the possible angels filling up the fringe tonight, at the edge of the border, in margins of the light. The sea is grass now, the sky is closing in. Keep your eyes on the horizon, we're living.
Listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Today in the studio, we're talking with the ISU LGBTSS coordinator, Bradley Freihofer. And Brad is describing Transgender Day, what the issues surrounding transgenders. And Brad, explain what's happening.
Yeah, so we're going to have Ellen Krung visit campus here on November 20th, and she's going to talk a little bit more about the variety of trans experience, and we're just so happy and pleased to have her on campus. It's been a partnership between student organizations and community organizations and our office as well.
Ellen Krug is the author of Getting to Ellen, a memoir about love, honesty, and gender change, And she transitioned from male to female in 2009. She's a graduate of Coe College and Boston College Law School, and practiced as a trial attorney in Boston and Cedar Rapids for 28 years. Before changing careers, she became the only Iowa attorney and one of the few in the nation to try lawsuits in separate genders. She speaks frequently about living as a transgender person, including how her perspectives have changed on gender. Her talks have included lessons learned about the need to live authentically and true to oneself. She currently works as the executive director of a Twin Cities-based nonprofit, where she also writes for Lavender Magazine and Access Line. Earlier this week, Cynthia interviewed Ellen, and so let's listen to that.
My name is Ellie Krug. I live in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I go by Ellie. I think that change is a relatively mild word, as it would relate to any trans person who is moving from where they were in terms of their assigned, what the phrase is, assigned birth at gender, to who they really are, and that is the gender that exists between their ears. And it's quite a transformation for anyone going through that. And but for most trans people, while facing fear is exceedingly crucial for almost everyone, it's a matter of survival. Because for those who choose to transition, once you make that decision, it is exceedingly difficult not to go forward, and certainly very difficult to go backwards, which happens every once in a while to people.
Can you share with our audience some of the things that they could expect during your presentation of your book and your specific journey in discovering your authentic self?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. I have written a book. The title of the book is Getting to Ellen, a memoir about love, honesty, and gender change. The book documents really my life growing up. It is intertwined with the story of my father, who, when I was 33 years old, committed suicide. And he was alcoholic as well. And so the story, technically the phrase is called braided memoir. So there are really two stories within one. And the reason that my father's story is in there is because, as happened with many families scarred by alcoholism, as well as some other issues, my father was greatly depressed, and he also cheated on my mother quite a bit. And so all of that affected me. And in the end, it affected my ability for me to recognize what gender issues I had. So my story really picks up with me as a little boy having some inkling that something wasn't right in terms of my gender, but not being able to focus on it, in large part because of dealing with the aftermath and the effects of my father himself. And so, long story short, I eventually fell in love with a girl when I was in high school. We were high school sweethearts. We went out, Lydia and I went out for 10 years. I went to law school. We got married right after law school. I practiced law in Boston for 5 years, moved back to Iowa, eventually created my own law firm. Lydia and I ended up living what would be, by all accounts, a charmed life. A house in the best neighborhood, two beautiful, adorable daughters, a three-car garage, money in the bank, my own law firm and social stature, and most of all, a tremendous love affair. I was tremendously in love with Lydia. She was in love with me. We were soulmates. And unfortunately, my gender issues, which continued to bounce into my life and then go away and then bounce and then go away, eventually they stopped bouncing away and they just stayed. As a result, I was forced to really face those gender issues. And ultimately, it became very clear to me that if I wasn't true to myself, one of two things would happen. One would be that I would probably end up committing suicide like my father, which, by the way, is something that happens with many transgender people who are unable to transition for whatever reason, or I'm sure that otherwise I would have been terribly depressed and turned to alcohol and other addictions as a way of coping with the idea that I wasn't able to live an authentic life. But somehow I got both lucky and a little bit brave, and I was able to transition.
How did you specifically discover that this was the issue, this was the root of the problem for you?
Well, I discovered it by, at some point, eventually understanding that there was a part of me that believed I was female, and I went to therapy. I always did what my father wouldn't do. My father never went to therapy, so for me, that was the logical thing to do, but that was not easy. My therapy began in Cedar Rapids in 1993, at a time when the word transgender really hadn't been invented, and at a time when the therapeutic community was totally ill-equipped to even deal with people who were gay or lesbian, let alone somebody who was transgender. So it took me a number of different therapists before I got to the point of really understanding that, yes, I am transgender, and B, that if I didn't do something about it, if I didn't do something positive about it, something negative would happen to me.
What would you recommend to our listening audience to understand transgender? Because it is, even though it's been around and people have been able to have surgeries and change to their authentic self, what would you want to share with them about this process or your experience in it?
Well, a couple of very key things. First is that transgender people, and the shorthand phrase is trans. Trans people are human, just like everyone else. They just happen to go through a struggle that in the end, if they transition, so if a male transitions from male to female, that struggle and that transitioning is very public. Whereas most other people who struggle with issues about authenticity or issues about, am I doing the right thing in life? I'm really an artist at heart, but my parents made me go to business school, and now I'm stuck sitting in a cubicle. Those are struggles for authenticity as well. But with trans people, that struggle becomes very public. So one of the things that I would say to people who are struggling with gender variant issues, that's really the technical phrase, gender variant, an individual who is different in terms of the way they view themselves, that is called gender identity, that their gender identity is different than their actual assigned sex at birth or their gender expression. And I don't want to get caught up in all of these phrases. I actually have a talk where I call it Words and Phrases for 500. So, but here's the idea, is that for people who have gender variant issues, it is important that they get help, that they not help to, change them, but help to understand and then help to create a support network for them to be able to create a plan for them to move and transition from what their gender expression was at the time that they started to grapple with this issue to really what their gender identity is in real life, in between their ears.
So just self-love is what I hear. They need to accept themselves and love themselves so they don't harm themselves.
Absolutely. In fact, the talk that I'm going to give in the Student Memorial Union at Iowa State at 8 o'clock on the 20th, the talk actually is entitled, quote, Living as Transgender, Compassion for Oneself and for Others. And that really, if there's one message that I want your audience to hear, it's this, is that many trans people struggle with their identity. They struggle with who they truly are because they live in a society that literally says, you are the gender that you are born with, and never shall you ever be able to get away from that. And the reality is that just as sexuality is on a spectrum, you have some people in terms of sexuality or who are completely heterosexual, some who are completely gay or lesbian. The old phrase was homosexual, okay? But many people on sexuality are on a spectrum, are in the middle, can be bisexual, or maybe, under the right circumstances, might be attracted to a same-sex relationship because it's a cool person or whatever. Gender is no different. There are some men that are going to be men's men and never vary from that and want to wear a beard and don't let a pink tie get anywhere close to them. And there are some women that only want to wear dresses and don't ever ask them to wear flannel. All right? And so, but there are many people in the middle, you know, and as a society, though, we need to categorize people. You know, for those in your audience who have had children, what was the very first question that mom or dad got asked after the baby was born? Very first question.
Usually, what sex is it?
Yep. Was it a boy or was it a girl?
Yep.
And that's because as a society, we need to categorize. We need to put people in. We need to put them in boxes because that's the way we operate. Gender variant people spill over. They don't exist in a box. And that is troubling for a lot of people. It's troubling for gender variant people because they've been taught they can't spill over. And also because they understand with the way society treats people who are quote unquote different, that they have much to lose in terms of people who love them, jobs, living arrangements, friends, support networks. And so, you know, there's a huge element of, Cynthia, of fear associated with being transgender.
That I can understand. And from what I've read, it's, transgender people are marginalized to the extreme.
They are. That's changing. But your audience should know that, you know, trans people have legal protections in Iowa, thank God.
Yes, Iowa is one of 16 states, I think.
There are 18 states, including the District of Columbia. So that means there are 33 states where a transgender person can be literally denied housing, could be denied credit, could be fired, although the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is now really offering protection for transgender people. So that's a little bit more protected than what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But now, one thing, though, I would like everyone to understand is this, is that imagine that you know that in order for you to be authentic, to live an authentic life where you don't have this voice, and that's really what I characterized it as, is for me, I called it a gut tug. This voice inside my head that kept saying, you need to live your own life. You have to have your own life. Imagine having that voice, but then having a major news network. For example, if you read in Rolling Stone magazine for the issue that came out on November 7th, there is a story about Coy, the transgender boy to girl in Colorado who made law in Colorado and history by, you know, her parents insisting that she use the girls' bathroom. And in that story, there is commentation by the Fox News Network about how abysmal, how absolutely crazy, that's one of the words used,
mm-hmm.
that society would be to allow, you know, to recognize transgender people. And
yeah.
people listen to that. So, for example, last week I spoke in Kansas City, Missouri, and neither in Missouri or in Kansas are there protections for trans people. And in fact, in Kansas had passed a law protecting LGBT people, and then the law was reversed by popular vote. So imagine living in a state where you've got some protection, and then the majority of the people in the state vote to take your rights away. So let's go back to that word compassion that we used before.
Yes.
You know, trans people, again, are human. All they're looking for is just some basic respect and some basic humanity from other folks. I mean, that's what we all want.
Yeah.
Regardless.
Well,
whether you're trans or not.
Some of the things that I've researched brought out the idea of why Transgender Day came about and the violence that was perpetrated on a transgender, multiracial individual, you know, a person of color, and they were killed. And then Transgender Day is to commemorate that person's death in Boston. And it's just sad that the violence that is that transgender individuals face and that they are marginalized. It's not okay to harm somebody. Anyway, I'm a little bit emotional about it because I don't like it.
No, and so let me pick up from that.
Yeah.
There have been many trans people who have been assaulted, murdered. I did a column in Access Line, Iowa, about Chrissy Bates, who was the very first person killed in Minneapolis in 2011. And Chrissy had been a transplant from Kentucky because she had to leave Kentucky because her family had rejected her when she started no longer living as a man and started living as a woman. Her family turned their back against her. She moved to Minneapolis. She was in Minneapolis only 2 or 3 months. And she did something that many trans people, many, I mean, this is very broad, not everyone by any stretch, but she resorted to survival crimes, which included prostitution as a way of being able to live, because trans people have the highest incidence of unemployment and underemployment, mm-hmm. anyone in the LGBT alphabet.
Yeah, they are marginalized to the point where they can't even be put, people, they are rejected from homeless shelters.
Absolutely, because somebody who is biologically male but identifies as female cannot be in a female catering shelter. But in Chrissy's case, she met the wrong person. And, you know, that person ended up murdering her. And no question, because of what her gender status was. And so, you know, it does happen. It happens with great frequency. However, I also want your audience to know that things are changing. It's incremental, but things are changing. The fact that I have written a book, that it's well received, that I've been asked to come and speak literally across the country, is proof that people across the spectrum want to know more about trans people, and they want to know more because they want to be accepting. And so I believe that there is a shift in this country and that there is a shift in attitude.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events here in Central Iowa. If you've just tuned in, we have just been listening to an interview with Ellen Krug, who will be presenting Living as Transgender at the Octagon Center and at the Sunroom at the Memorial Union, Iowa State University. She will be speaking from 11:30 to 1 p.m. at the Octagon Center for the Arts in their community gallery. And will be presenting her book and doing a reading and a meet and greet. And she will also be presenting Living as Transgender at 8 p.m. at the Sunroom at the Iowa State Memorial Union.
Here in the studio, we're talking with ISU LGBTSS coordinator Bradley Freihofer. Hi, Bradley.
Hi.
Transgender Day is a day of remembrance and one that deals with the issue of violence and discrimination against transgender individuals.
We want to talk about if you know any specific stories about violence of transgenders, because that Ellen talked about it and I've read a lot. Can you give us some examples of what you know of, Brad?
Yeah, I think, you know, we see a variety of different challenges that our students experience from verbal, whether they're, you know, walking down the street on Lincoln Way here in Ames or maybe downtown or on Welch Avenue and they hear, you know, people yelling at cars at them, or they hear remarks, you know, when they're eating or wherever it might be. So I think the verbal is a component. And really the safety, having students having folks not refer to students with the name and pronouns that they would like. And I think that would be a discerning moment for anyone if they were referred to by pronouns that didn't reflect who they are. And so I think there's those stories. There's the stories of challenge where, you know, students maybe coming to campus and then going back home and navigating, okay, you know, it's the summer, I'm back at home in my, you know, my rural Iowa community, and I want to use the pool, and I want to go swimming, but how do I do this? How do I navigate this? And what issues and challenges will there be? And I think some of our students have experienced that, where they're going to feel isolated, or folks are going to want to clear out a restroom or a bathroom so that they can use it, which, you know, great and not great at the same time, because they're placed in that space of, okay, obviously I'm the one who's different here, and I don't get that chance to just be like the other folks in my community. And so I think we see students who experience those type of things. We've had students who are going to navigate, trying to navigate all the systems, whether it's healthcare, whether it's legal. We talked a little bit already about maybe driver's license versus a passport, and you know, navigating those type of things. So I think our students see a variety of different experiences. When we look at the research in Iowa, Iowa Pride Network does a kind of an Iowa campus climate survey each year, and the last time that they did that, so again, I think the research I'm going to state is from 2009, but 19% of LGBT youth felt were physically assaulted in schools. And I think that's evident that we have issues going on both K through 12 and beyond. And so those issues don't stop right when we get out of, when we graduate high school. They can still linger. And those are some of the pieces that we're trying to do education around, especially at Iowa State University, where our students can be more knowledgeable about the experiences for transgender people.
As I understand it, we spoke earlier that Transgender Day is actually in memorial to, or it was started as a memorial to, a very violent murder in Boston. So the dimensions of this is actually gets quite serious. Can you describe how serious this has gotten? Can you give us some historical incidents of what kind of violence we're talking about?
We're talking about violence that's incredibly severe, things that are incredibly hard to read. And so if folks do go online and search for National Transgender Day of Remembrance, they'll find a website that chronicles the 2013, the folks we've lost, or that we know of that we've lost, based on transphobia or hate related to transgender
people.
I mean, there are stories. The story that comes to mind right now is a 16-year-old living in, I think, Montego Bay, Jamaica, brutally beaten and murdered, and the story is just heartbreaking because of their gender expression, their gender identity, or perceived gender expression or gender identity. And so it's just there's many stories like that as we look through this list for this year and for all the years that we've looked in the past.
So do you think the young people who are going through this, you know, seeking out safe groups or safe parties is a good option? You know, like you said, PFLAG and what you do at LGBT Student Services at Iowa State, you know, just make wise choices if you are in transition.
Yeah, I think for building communities, one major aspect of what we do, and so, you know, I get calls from parents who have transgender children, and they've got questions. They're trying to figure it, understand it themselves, and we've got great community partners to help build that community, whether it's AIMS PFLAG or PFLAG chapter in Iowa. We've got many. Or at our office, what I'm really excited about is that our students can come to Iowa State, no matter where they're coming from around the globe, and we can get them connected with a community. And so when they're on campus, they've got access to those resources of gathering groups, and they've got connections to some of our programming, and they can become a panelist on our Speakers Bureau panel, or just talk with other folks. You know, we have six student LGBT student organizations or interest groups at Iowa State. And so there's usually generally an organization for students who are coming. And if there isn't, they can create one.
I just want to touch on a last point, Brad. Earlier this month, the Senate passed the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, or ENDA, which will provide strong federal protections against discrimination, making it explicitly illegal to fire someone because they are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, LGBT. The bill now must be passed by the House of Representatives. What would ENDA do to, you know, what do you think the ramifications of it passing would do? Or not passing? I mean, it just...
I think it's a huge issue. I think it's a very important piece of legislation that I certainly hope continues its progress. Here in Iowa, we've actually passed some similar legislation. So in Iowa, I'm always delighted to say Iowa's a great place to work and live when it comes to protections for LGBT people. ENDA would allow then for a national conversation. So I'll use a few examples. If a student, for example, or any of us are looking for a job in another state or in another location with a different company or organization, some of our students will come and ask the question, you know, can I be out? Can I be who I am in those states, in those with those organizations? And with ENDA not being in place right now, it's very difficult to navigate those challenges. We really have to talk with each student on a case-by-case basis to figure out what their plan is going to be. How can we work with them in their comfort and create a plan that's going to work for them? But that's a really tough battle to host, right? To be with your partner or be who you are, whether it's transitioning or otherwise, when you know you feel that risk that you could lose your job simply because of that. And I think that's a really, really, really big challenge. And that's why ENDA is so important. That includes both sexuality and gender identity.
What are the chances that this bill will get passed? It's gone through the Senate,
it's
right?
It's gone through the Senate, which is an outstanding accomplishment. We've seen the legislation come up before and not have as much success. So, you know, it's hard to know. I think we've got a lot of folks across the country who are working on it right now.
Is it on the floor?
I don't believe it's on the House floor yet. And so we'll
I thought it was I'm going to get his name wrong. The speaker allowed it to be presented, and I'm not sure where it is at this moment. Mm-hmm. I mean,
so it still has to be heard, I think, at least in the House floor, and has had some debate surrounding it. Mm-hmm. And obviously the vote has not yet taken place in the House. So we're looking forward to hopefully having some conversation around that when that happens.
Okay. Brad, thank you for joining us. Do you have any last thoughts that you'd like to share?
You know, I just want, I guess, folks to know across Central Iowa that it's really important to learn about these issues because they all matter to all of us, and they matter to folks within our Iowa community. I also want folks, certainly who may identify in the trans community, to know there's a lot of resources and support here, and especially at Iowa State. So folks should certainly feel free to contact us if they have any questions.
Any website?
Our website it's a little bit of a lengthy one, so I'll try to keep it brief, but it's www.dso.iastate.edu/LGBTSS.
And we'll put a link to that on the KHOI website as well.
Great.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio at 89.1 FM, Story City Ames, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We had ISU LGBTSS coordinator Bradley Fryhofer, who discussed the issues that they are facing. Also, Alan Krug will be presenting Living as Transgender at the Octagon Center for the Arts and at 11 o'clock and in the Sunroom at the Memorial Union at the ISU campus at 8 p.m.
Transgender Week begins on November 11th through the 17th. Transgender Day is November 20th.
You can also listen to this show and all of our past local talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. And like I said, we'll have links there to the various organizations that were discussed today. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and check us out on Facebook. As we approach the end of the year, we are asking that you consider making a donation to KHOI Radio. Our goal is to connect with 500 families or individuals who can donate $250 for sustaining operating costs. It's very exciting. We started building our studios yesterday. The ceiling is halfway up.
Yep, it's happening, folks.
And one of these days, we will no longer be broadcasting from the storefront. By the way, we invite anybody who would like to come and watch our morning broadcasts on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to come and join us here on the couch.
Yeah, Rick made coffee. It's good.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878, or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. Again, you can listen to this show again online, also at khoifm.org. Click on the Programs tab and click Local Talk. Your participation as an audience and your generous donations help make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being with us, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Bread and water, like some poor man's daughter, no, never for me. Wine and money called me honey and made me feel I was free. Like a glass raised too many times, I broke.